Welcome to the Millionaire Secrets Podcast, where the most successful people in the world share their secrets to help you create the awesome life you desire. Welcome to another episode of Millionaire Secrets. This is Jeff Lerner, your host, always thrilled to be joining you again and to be joined by incredible entrepreneurs, incredible humans, just doing incredible things. Today's no exception to that. I'm joined by Matt Aitchison. He is a real estate investor, a coach, a speaker, a philanthropist, and most exciting to me, he's, well, two things very exciting to me. One is, like myself, he is deeply committed and passionate to helping other people create more wealth, more fulfillment, more freedom in their life. And he's also a deeply committed husband and father. So Matt, welcome to Millionaire Secrets. Appreciate being here.
Jeff, what up, brother? Always great to be hanging with you, having some good convo, man. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, likewise, man. I'm excited to dive in. You know, as my audience knows, I don't really prepare for these things too much. I like to approach
it. Best way to do it.
Yeah, it's like, hey, you know, it's like we're going to lunch, only there's other people listening and some of them even watching. So, let's just pick right back up where we left off. Cause you know, even though the show is called Millionaire Secrets and somebody may be like, well, okay, I just want to know how to make money. I want to become a millionaire. I think in a way that's exactly what we were talking about with discipline and habits and commitment. And before we hit record, we were talking about, you just finished a 75 hard challenge.
Yep.
Right. For anyone that doesn't know, can you kind of briefly explain what that means?
Yeah. So, I mean, every year I like to, at least in Q1, kind of set some type of gritty health challenge, just kind of set the tone, especially in 2020 last year. My wife and I were drinking a few more glasses of wine throughout the week than we normally do. And the discipline in terms of health, nutrition, fitness kind of was slipping for me, which has always been a big pillar in what I call my lead domino in life. When my fitness is on point, that discipline usually carries into my business, my marriage, how I parent with my children, all kinds of things, right? And so I had been exploring different challenges. I mean, I've been to different spiritual retreats. I've been to CrossFit challenges, marathon, all kinds of stuff like that. And this one was one that I've been a fan of Andy Frisella, his podcast, his brand, and kind of what he stands for. And I'd been seeing that float around for some time. And I was like, I don't want to do this. And for those that don't know what it is, basically it is a gallon of water a day, two workouts, 45 minutes minimum each. And one of those workouts has to be outdoors, rain, sun, sleet, snow, whatever it is. One of those has to be outdoors. You have to read 10 pages out of a physical personal development book, no audiobooks. No podcasts, and you take a progress picture every day, and then you have to pick a diet, any diet you want to. I chose the keto diet for 75 days, which we can talk about that. I don't recommend it, but I definitely shredded up because of that. And you have to do all of those things every single day. And if you miss any one of those things, you could be on day 74. And if you miss one of those things, you have to start back over. So it's not just doing some of those things together. It's all of them together every day, stringing those wins along for 75 days straight. And that was, there was a lot of takeaways, a lot of ahas. I'm sure we can talk about some of those, but for me, you know, kind of going back to what we talked about earlier is I know I'm a much better and more intentional and purposeful person when my health and my nutrition are at peak, state and performance. And anytime I feel myself slipping in those areas, I see my performance slip in other areas of my life as well. And I rationalize excuses and my rhythm and my routine start to slip, right? And get a little bit soft. And so that's why I started with the challenge this last year in 2021 to kick off with 75 hard. And I'm feeling the most momentum personally and professionally that I've felt in my entire life, which has been kind of cool.
That's awesome. And so, I want to talk a lot more about this. I mean, in fact, I'm telling myself, don't spend the entire show talking about this, Jeff, because I just get so into it and for reasons, you know, we can discuss. But so from an accountability perspective, you know, you
if you stop or if you miss a day, you have to start over, right?
Yep.
And you mentioned taking a progress pic every day. Are you posting it? Are you somehow putting yourself on display?
Some people choose not to. It's optional, right? Some people might be self-conscious and not want to put all their stuff out there. I chose to add that extra layer of accountability. So I posted every single day on my Instagram stories for 75 days straight. I also had an accountability group. I started with 30 people in the challenge. Only three of us finished flawlessly throughout the challenge. And then I also have a personal accountability group of guys. There's six of us. We've been on a call every single Wednesday for an hour for the last 5.5 years. And we review our goals every quarter and what those commitments are. So I was accountable to them. So that was that extra layer of accountability beyond just myself. One of the things that, you know, he talks about in this challenge is at the end of the day, you're only accountable to yourself. You can sit here and, you know, write out that you completed all of those things when maybe you knew you only read 9 out of the 10 pages, or you only had 120 out of the 132 ounces of water you should have had. The only person you're really cheating is yourself. And I think that's applicable in all areas of life, right? Is that word integrity is so important, whether it's in business, whether it's in your relationship with your spouse, whether it's upholding your word and doing what you said you were going to do with your children or with your employees or just to yourself. And so for me, you know, that was a big, big thing that I was going to carry through. We all kind of like, you know, find ways to rationalize excuses or why this couldn't happen or why it's not an ideal situation or circumstance. And how many times have we done that in so many different contexts of life? And so for me, it was really exciting to start stacking those wins of integrity and discipline and focus and just pure outcome-driven results on top of each other every single day. And what that kind of, you know, fueled into other areas of my life. And one of the things that I always talk about in terms of, you know, health is a big part of, you know, we'll just leave it in the word millionaire, right? In that context. You know, when I created my podcast, Millionaire Mindcast, about 5 years ago, I started it because I wanted to study other millionaires, just like many people are listening to your show, right? And why it's become so popular is people are intrigued about what others who have peak performance, not just in their bank account and in their business, right? But who are millionaires in all areas of their life. What are they doing? You know, based on where they're at in their journey and their wisdom and their own experiences, what little nuggets can you pick and pull from those people and kind of extract and apply into your own journey based on where you're at? And when I started studying a lot of millionaires, I started realizing there are really two different types of millionaires. There is the millionaire who is a financial killer and they've got a great business and they got a bunch of commas and zeros in their bank account, but they're bankrupt in their health. They are bankrupt in their relationship with their spouse or their partner. They're estranged or they're bankrupt in their relationship with their kids, with their employees. They don't give back to charities or causes outside of just serving themselves. But then I realized there were other millionaires who not only lived purposefully, intentionally disciplined in how they ran their business and built their wealth, but they lived as equally as intentional and purposeful and lived like a millionaire in their marriages and with their kids and in their businesses and in their right communities. And the list goes on and on. So I wanted to study the whole life millionaire.
Yeah.
And how are they taking this holistic approach of discipline and focus and goal setting and purposefulness, and not just the financial pillar of their life and garden, but in all gardens of life. And at the end of the day, what I realized was almost every single one of them, at least that, you know, were financially abundant, but also extremely abundant in every other area of their life, were extremely purposeful and curious about how to take and enhance their health and their nutrition to another level, because they knew that when they were physically optimized, it ultimately made them mentally optimized, which those two vice versa kind of feed off one another. And when one of those is off, it at the end of the day showed in their performance in other gardens of their life. So for me, I've always been very intrigued on what other people are doing and how they're doing it, and just trying to be my own experimentation on what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, I resonated with So I wanted to interrupt you like 9 times. Just, I resonated with like so much of what you just said. And you talked about, I liked the term you used, your lead domino. You know, I took the essentially the same concept from Charles Duhigg's book, The Power of Habit.
Yep.
Which you may well have read. It wouldn't surprise me. He talks about the keystone habits. Those habits that, to your point, they're like the leading indicator habits of how everything else in your life is going to go too. And I suspect this is fairly common, but I can certainly say you and I are very similar. It is all about health and fitness for me.
Yep. Yeah. If
I am going to the gym every day and I'm extremely conscientious about what I'm putting in my body, it's so true, man. I even view it as like Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. Like, who am I going to show up as today? You know, if I eat well and I work out, I'm Dr. Jekyll. I'm a good man. I'm revered. I say revered. I'm respected.
Yeah.
I have the respect of my children. I serve them well. My wife, I'm a good husband. I show up well in my business. And man, if I let that slip, it's Mr. Hyde.
Oh,
you don't even want to meet that guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, not only is there the external side of who you show up as to other people in the world, but the wars that happen up in here when you're not doing what you know you're capable of doing. And for those that can't see, I'm pointing to my head, the wars and the battles that we have in our mind every single day, you know, those are the things that ultimately, when I go back to like integrity, right? When I'm like doing what I know I should be doing at the level I know I should be doing it at, whatever the results end up being, I can live with that. But when I'm selling myself short and then I'm selling my employees or I'm selling my kids or I'm selling my wife or, you know, anybody short of what I know I can bring to the table, then there becomes this inner friction and turmoil and battle that I have up in my head. You suck, you're weak, you can't, right? All of the stuff that we all know we shouldn't be saying to ourselves, but at the end of the day, we all do, right? And so when you stack those wins, and for me, you know, you said yours is your health and nutrition. I have 2 lead dominoes in my life. If my health and nutrition is on point, I'm that much more dangerous and weaponized in all areas of my life and my business. And when my relationship with my spouse, my wife, is on point, I show up as a better husband. I'm more energized. I'm happier, you know, going to work and all of those things, right? So I started playing around with this kind of, you know, and inspired by people like Tim Ferriss and other kind of life biohackers, right? That are always like trying to figure out what that next level of performance or awareness or clarity, right? Always that next level of 2.0 in yourself, your lifestyle, your income, your bank account, relationships, whatever it may be, right? That's just as entrepreneurs, as business owners, of people who have big goals and dreams and aspirations, it's what we're always going to be designed to do. We want to know what is next, right? And so for me, I said, you know what? I'm a rhythm and a framework guy. I like having guardrails because I'm a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde type of guy, right? Like when shit's good, it's good. When it's bad, I'm going dark, right? Mm-hmm. And so for me, I needed to know when I'm operating and when you feel like, and we all know kind of when you feel like you're in that flow state, right? Of like, man, I feel this momentum. There's nothing that can bring me down. I'm dialed in. I'm the Terminator. Whatever gets put in front of me, I'm taken down, right? And I said, I've never really taken inventory of what's going on in my life, what's going on in my routine. What does my rhythm look like when I'm operating at that level? And I'm a big awareness guy because when we're more aware on what's going on, and we're clear on what that is, we can either get in and double down on what we're doing to crush it, or we can maybe course correct or tweak or pivot or optimize if things aren't working according to plan, right? And so I took inventory of when I'm operating at what I just called 90% or better. And there were really these 10 things that I wrote down. And I would encourage anybody to go, when you're in that flow state, when you feel dangerous and weaponized in life or in business, health, relationships, all areas, right? What is going on? And for me, it was I'm eating clean and healthy. Usually I'm doing some type of intermittent fasting, whole foods. I'm getting 6 to 7 hours of sleep a night. I'm working on projects that I'm extremely passionate about and enthusiastic about, which really that energy flows into all other areas of my life through and beyond my work. I'm working with world-class talent who I have fun with and who challenge me and who inspire me. So who are you surrounding yourself with as you're doing those things? I'm making money. Let's be honest. I love making money. And when I'm, you know, making money, everything seems to feel and be better, right? My morning and my evening routines are dialed in. I'm working out consistently and challenging myself physically. I'm emotionally, spiritually, and physically connected to my wife. And I am playing full out as a father and getting quality time and creating memorable moments with my daughters. And so when those things are happening in my life, I'm pretty dangerous. I'm pretty happy. I'm pretty fulfilled. I'm pretty purposeful and productive. And I notice that when I feel like something's a little bit off or I'm slipping somewhere, I can literally go back to every single one of these pillars and usually spotlight something that is slipping and is bleeding into other areas of my life slipping too. But knowing at least what my peak performance is, I then can be a little bit clearer and more purposeful when I'm aware things are off. What do I need to go plug back into that I know will at least allow me to swing that pendulum back and create that momentum going back in the right direction?
Yeah, I love that you took the time to do that. You know, a lot of people talk about like a vision board, right? Like I'm going to put all the stuff on this board that I want to have or that I'm going to achieve. I love the idea of a vision board, but I hate the idea of a vision board with all the stuff that I'm going to have.
Yeah.
What about all the ways that I need to be?
Yeah.
Like, so you just described your vision of the best version of Matt. And it is such a useful litmus test to be able to, you know, hopefully proactively and preemptively identify, you know, going off the rails or, you know, any sort of deviation from your best self before you have to identify it because it's showing up in your results.
Yep.
That's why this is so useful. You don't want to wait until you lost a relationship or never mind even lost, but until you're having a fight with your spouse or your business is suffering or there's nothing worse than looking at yourself and going, I can't believe I gained 5 or 10 pounds. Now I got to lose it. I got to do that work all over again. Right. You want to be able to identify it beforehand. And that's where I think having a vision of what you're, you know, what are the traits that define your best self? That is just so brilliantly useful.
Oh, absolutely. And again, I think it's something different for everybody. You know, one of the acronyms I use, at least on my podcast is, you know, I created a planner. It's called the Rich Life Planner. And the acronym RICH is, at the end of the day, everybody has a different definition or vision of what living a rich life looks like. For me, it consists of these kind of four pillars though. R in RICH stands for relationships. So having very purposeful personal and professional relationships. I, having very intentional and purposeful plans around your income and your investments. So your active income and your passive investment vehicles. Then you have C, your community and contribution. So who do you surround yourself with? What are you plugged into? Mastermind groups, chamber of commerce, whatever it is, right? And other causes and charities beyond just serving yourself. Mm-hmm. And then H, health, mental, physical, and spiritual, right? And that can encompass a lot, but that's my definition of a rich life. And then obviously everybody under those categories can design different goals and approaches and intentions behind those things. But I like to use frameworks because life's complicated and there's so many different hooks and so many different distractions that are going to pull you in so many different directions all the time. And if you can have frameworks that are kind of like what I call the bumpers to my bowling alley of life, mm-hmm. You know, I want to make sure that I'm not bowling gutter balls and I'm at least hitting pins down. And when I'm in the zone and I know what I need to do in terms of my rhythm, I'm probably going to be hitting strikes and spares here and there. But without those frameworks, right, it's very easy for people to just get caught up in the, you know, what I call the vortex of life. And, it's one of those things where if you don't have purpose and intention and kind of guardrails around the things that you know you need them for, you most likely won't, you know, ultimately optimize what you're capable of doing, whether it's in your health or your relationships or any area of life. So I'm a big rhythm guy. I'm a big routine guy. I'm a big framework guy because I've never been the fastest, smartest, or strongest. I'm usually good at modeling after people who are and applying that into my own unique journey based on what my goals are, what am I trying to accomplish, and by when. And then from there, I can kind of reverse engineer with those frameworks, the best routines, the best goals, the best resources that are all aligned and congruent with that. But you got to be clear. And like you said, there's got to be that awareness around what it is that you're actually going after. And then what is the best, you know, plan and accountability that you can bake into that for your own life. So that way you're building those stepping stones, or what I call the breadcrumbs of life along the trail, that you can keep following to get to your destination. It's not going to be flawless. We're all, you know, flawed human beings. But if you can give yourself those guardrails and those frameworks to plug into, you're going to have that much more likeliness of succeeding at what you're trying to accomplish.
Hey, sorry for the interruption. I just wanted to let you know you can get a free copy of my book, The Millionaire Shortcut, which shows you the fastest way to become a millionaire in the new economy. And there's a special link just for this episode in the description. So thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the episode. You know, I mean, obviously I've done, I don't know what episode this is, like 150 plus episodes of my show. And I really started it for much the same reason you described. You know, just let me meet as many successful people as I can so they'll rub off on me, basically. Mm-hmm. And I will say that, you know, this, it's not one specific framework, but it is absolutely having a framework.
Yeah.
Or, you know, where you sort of establish your definition of a fulfilled life, and then you build a model that you can consistently gravitate to. Because like you said, daily life is messy and chaotic and distracting and confusing, and we get tired, and it already has to have been thought out ahead of time.
Yeah.
Or else we're not going to do it right in the moment.
Yep.
And I will say that, I mean, that is a, you know, at least based on 150 data points, it is a universal truth for mm-hmm. really successful people. We've all taken the time to figure out. And I love what you said about there's two kinds of rich people or two kinds of millionaires. When you said that, I wrote down, there's people who make money the most important thing.
Yep.
And then there's people who make excellence the most important thing. And that's my language. I'm fixated on the word excellence, and
yep.
And it's that latter camp that you're talking about. But those people, I would almost challenge anyone to find one of those people who isn't operating off of a fairly simple framework.
Yeah, you're spot on. I know one of my mentors, Jeff Hoffman, he always says, you know, don't chase money, chase excellence. The excellence chases the money, right? Or the money chases the excellence. And so, you know, for me, I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed. So I like to create very simple frameworks. I'm an executor. I work hard. Right. So those are a lot of things where I'm not the LeBron James who's, you know, just got that natural God-given talent. I have certain God-given talents, but at the end of the day, there are a lot of other things holistically that make up this whole package of life for me. And so I try and surround myself with people that are way smarter than me. And I've just always had the belief in myself. One of my early mentors told me, if you want to be successful in life, all you have to do is be dumb enough to believe in yourself every single day and smart enough to take action on those beliefs. And so for me, I've just had a lot of failing forward moments in my life. And I've had a lot of, how do I check my ego at the door and get better from whatever these results are telling me? Right. And if it worked, great. Let me double down and figure out how to, you know, get there a little bit quicker, a little bit more efficiently, and a little bit more effectively. And if I lost, well, what are the learning, you know, lessons in this process that I can use to what I call weaponize myself? Right. I've learned way more from my failures and my losses than I have of all the wins. Right. And so when I look down at my kind of tool belt metaphorically of life and, those lessons that I've learned, it's usually been the tools that have been added on there have been from the dark times and the challenging times. You know, I got expelled from high school. I got arrested in college. I, you know, probably wasn't supposed to be successful according to a lot of the people that knew me early on in my life. And yet it was just being curious enough to continue asking quality questions, and based on what my goals were and what I was looking to accomplish, continue believing in myself and just taking action on it every single day and being aware enough to look at and reflect on the results or the data, the feedback that's being given to me, and make little adjustments over time. Because when you think about it, you know, whether it's wealth or it's a successful marriage or partnership, business, whatever it may be, the best things are always made in the crock pot. And the crock pot has a lot of different ingredients that take time to come together and create that dish, right? Like, you can go and put something in the microwave and get it like that, but at the end of the day, it's not really going to be that great. It's not going to be that worthwhile. And I look at that in terms of everything that's worthwhile in my life. Is I want results and dishes, i.e. in my wealth and my bank account and my business and my marriage and my relationship with my daughters. All of those things are what I want to create in the crock pot, knowing that I took all the necessary time to put all the right ingredients in. I put in the work and I let it have the time that it needed to produce the result that ultimately is required in order to get that outcome. And I think a lot of people, they want it quick. Don't get me wrong. I'm a millennial. I pace in front of the microwave, right? I want my shit fast, right? Which we all do. We all want those quick hits of dopamine and gratification and all of that. But at the end of the day, when you think about the best stuff in life, whether it's your wealth, it's a successful business, it's a strong marriage, it's great friendships, whatever it may be, that doesn't come in the microwave. It really is created in the crock pot. And so having that long-term perspective of becoming a millionaire, and mind you, millionaire in the context nowadays is $1 million is not really that much. And at the end of the day, the people who have become millionaires will tell you that when they looked at their bank account statement the day before and the day after they became a millionaire, they didn't really feel that much different, right? So I'm a big believer that money only makes you more of who you already are. And it's just going to give you more of a platform and a spotlight to truly exemplify and enhance those qualities within you. If you're a good person, you're going to use your money and your platform and your brand and your opportunities to go and make an impact and to influence people and to create a better life for yourself and for your family and other things that you're passionate about. And if you're a shitty person, you're just going to find more opportunities to be a shittier person when you have that money as well, right? So I really do think money is absolutely important, and it's a very strong tool and resource that every single one of us who has good intentions and has really amazing goals tied to their money should 100% chase and go after. And it shouldn't be demonized, and it shouldn't be this bad, negative thing that oftentimes we've seen and heard for many decades and years, whether that was through parents or teachers or grandparents, or in the media, right? I think, you know, more and more people should aspire to be millionaires, but there is a plan and a path that goes along with that. And there are many different ones that all converge to kind of crossing that threshold milestone, but be open and flexible. And at the same time, know that there are foundational principles that are going to help you get there without you having to struggle and learn those things on your own by listening to shows like this.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned the crock pot. I love the crock pot analogy. Although I want to make sure, you know, we cook in a crock pot sometimes, and all a crock pot requires is time, roughly. I mean, you got to have power.
Yeah.
But you're not the one supplying the power, assuming you paid your power bill, right?
Yep.
The hard thing, I think, is that success, as you were talking, I was picturing a crock pot hooked up to like a stationary bike where you have to pedal to generate the heat.
Mm.
And it's like, if you ask people, okay, you say, oh, would you rather cook in a crock pot? Would you rather eat food that was cooked in a crock pot or a microwave? Most people would say the crock pot because it's going to taste better.
Yep.
But would you rather cook your food in the crock pot or the microwave, knowing that you have to pedal a bike to generate the heat? Most people would choose microwave. They just don't want to do it that long.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so, you know, you were talking about that. That's always been such a prevailing theme for me in having these conversations, is just that consistency, that ability to take action on our good days, on our bad days, on all the days in between, over longer periods of time than most people are willing to do, and long enough periods of time that they start to beg the question of, is this working? Is this person wasting their time? You know, is this person likely to be successful? Like, those are non-negotiables in my experience. It's always got to have that component. And you mentioned the 75 hard thing. You said you had a group.
Yep.
And how many people started and how many people finished?
A little over 30, and we had 3 finished. So less than 10% finished.
Yeah. So when I started my business Entra, I was doing a presentation. I was speaking at a marketing conference in September of 2018. And I told the audience, and I had no, like, I didn't have a podcast. I didn't have a social media presence. Nobody really knew who Jeff Lerner was. And I told the audience, I said, I'm going to take however long it takes, and I'm going to learn what to do. I'm going to become a student of Instagram and Facebook and YouTube, and I'm going to start putting out content. And I basically issued myself a challenge. I said, using my phone and a selfie stick, I'm going to build a $1 million business just by creating content. And I said, who would like to do it with me? And there were about 50 people in the room, virtually every hand went up. And long story short, I ended up selling a program. I think it was like $1,000 or something, where you could live with me in a, not live with me physically, obviously, but you could be with me in a private Facebook group where we would hold each other accountable. I would encourage you. I would tell you everything that I learned that day. Every day I would post a video that's like, okay, today I learned this about the YouTube algorithm, or I learned this about Instagram, or I had this idea for how to create more content or how to edit my content. And it was just like, you can hitch your wagon to me and I will lead you on this journey. So let's say I had 40 people in the group, and the original mandate was, we're going to do this for 90 days. And I said, I'm not going to stop, but let's at least target 90 days as our starting point. By 60 days, all but one person had quit making. And all you had to do to stay in the group was make one video and publish it every day.
Wow.
Which you can do in 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah, right.
After 60 days, all but one had dropped out. Shortly after the 60th day, that one remaining person dropped out. And I was alone. So I canceled the group or whatever. And that was 2.5 years ago. And I've basically doing that built, you know, one of the biggest education companies in the world, and everybody else quit.
Yep.
And it's like, it's that same thing you're talking about. It's like, why, maybe you can speak to this. Why is it so hard to do the right things consistently over time? Well, that's it. Why is it so hard to do the right things consistently over time?
Yeah.
Any thoughts?
I mean, that's... We're going to win a Nobel Peace Prize if we solve this problem, because the exactly. world's going to be a lot better of a place if we can crack that code for most people. I mean, I think, you know, one of my early mentors told me that repetition is the mother of all success. Mm-hmm. The people who have the ability to do the monotonous, boring shit every single day, whether you want to do it or not, right? Because motivation, as many people would agree, is, you know, garbage, right? It's never there for you when you need it most. Mm-hmm. And so how do you win those conversations up in your own brain that then physically can create a different result in action for you? One of my favorite analogies or acronyms is called PTFAR, P-T-F-A-R. And ultimately it is your, P is your programming, your subconscious mind, right? Leads to your T, thoughts, your subconscious fuels your conscious. Then your F, your thoughts, lead to how you feel about certain things. And based on how you feel about certain things, A will inquire you to act a certain way or not. And then based on those actions or lack of actions thereof leads to your R, results. And based on your R, it reaffirms your programming. So when I think about some of the things that I used to hate doing or that I didn't want to do, and I just knew I had to do them, I kind of went back and said, well, what is my programming around this? And why is it this way? Because the beautiful thing about this rhythm and this acronym is that you could break the, you know, the link in that cycle and set it on a new track. So if you think about all the areas of your life that maybe you're struggling with or challenged by certain opportunities or activities or commitments or whatever it may be, I'd encourage people to, you know, think about their brain, their subconscious mind as a filing cabinet that you've been filing shit away in for years and years and years and years. And you really need to take inventory of what's in there and then how is that serving you? And if it's not, the beauty is you can literally make a change in your life just by making one simple decision that is completely different or opposite than what you have been doing and what has been yielding you those results. So again, I'm a big tweaker and tester. I like to start with something small. What is one simple thing that you can do every single day that swings the pendulum in a different direction? So for a lot of people, right, if it's, I struggle with food, well, then remove all the shit out of your cupboards that is temptation for you and set yourself up for success. If it's, I need to get better physical exercise in my life, well, what's one thing you can do every day? Go for a 30-minute walk outside, right? So thinking about little things, don't make it so big and so overwhelming. Just think of small, simple little rhythms that you can do no matter what at a bare minimum. What is that repetition that you can plug into that little things done over an extended period of time turn into big things, right? So 75 days of doing these little things every day, I look up and it actually turned into really big results and momentum in my life physically and mentally. So instead of overwhelming yourself and overcommitting to all kinds of crazy things that you think you need to do, I like to stack rhythms and habits on top of each other, one at a time, as you get more consistency with that thing. And then it just becomes part of who you are and what you do. It's kind of like breaking through whatever ceiling you feel like is hanging over your head and making a new, your new floor and your norm of just what you do, how you think, how you act by very simple routines. So I think that's something that people could probably take inventory of and look at habits that aren't serving them and what's one habit that they could incorporate in. But when you look at, you know, anything in terms of going back to the context of the crock pot, anything that's worthwhile having is going to be something that is usually probably a pretty simple answer or framework. It's the lack of discipline that people struggle with in order to get those results. And oftentimes that's either the people that they're surrounding themselves with that create that kind of struggle for them to follow through, or it's the environment. So I'm a big believer in auditing your peer group once a quarter and bulletproofing your environment once a month, because it's very easy for people to integrate themselves into your world that may not be serving you and are actually distracting you or completely deterring you from doing what you should be doing, or it's something in your environment that found its way in that you could remove and create some barriers, or what I call the bunker. You know, I try and create bunkers and compartments to my life that I know I'm not going to get sniped out of and, you know, my head taken off theoretically in terms of staying focused, dialed in, and consistent with the stuff that I know I need to.
So, I mean, I couldn't agree more with everything you said. You know, that PT FAR, point FAR, you know, reminiscent to me of the be do have concept. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. Which is, yep. I can't remember if that was Stephen Covey or Jim Rohn, probably originated somewhere before either of them. But I'm curious, you know, given that everything else is, you know, programming is the only thing that's causal, right? And everything else is a domino that falls from there, right?
Yep.
You know, your thoughts, your feelings, your actions, your results. Then the only way, and this is the great challenge of my life as an educator and somebody who's trying to inspire people to take a different approach in life. The only thing that you really, if you want to get to the source, you have to rework your programming.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard because programming lives in the subconscious.
Yep.
Which means you can't consciously work on it. So I'm curious for you, and I agree, by the way, with what you said. It's, you know, your environment, your influences. I have some basic rules I use of belief that it's contagious. It involves momentum. It involves expectations. It involves mm-hmm. habits. It involves our plan. And it's also very vulnerable to outside influences. But I'm curious for you, two things. One, your programming strikes me as pretty solid. How did you get solid programming? Was it something you were blessed with at a young age? Is it something you worked hard to arrive at? What was that journey? And then also, I guess part two of the question is, how do you advise people to start doing that work on themselves if their programming's off?
Yeah. I mean, that's a layered topic and conversation. And I think it's, you know, you got to meet people where they're at. And there's a lot of layers to that in terms of, you know, whether it's baggage or trauma, who's influenced you, what does your kind of operating system look like now? And why does it look that way? First and foremost, you really have to take inventory of your programming. I'll give you an example. So for me, my programming early on in life, when I was hanging around 9 people who like to smoke weed every day and drink and party and not do shit, I became the 10th person. And that ultimately really kind of rewired a lot of my programming by being around those people and being in those environments. When I got arrested and I was, you know, facing some actual consequences in jail time, I was so scared of the reality of what my actions and the path I was on had led me to kind of face that I committed to something completely opposite of that and kind of just said, I don't know what it looks like, but I'm going to start taking the steps to go in the opposite direction of what I've been doing, right? So it could be just doing completely different things than you have been doing. But to get a little bit more granular, I would say for me, it's been this awareness. I mean, I've been going to different retreats, different, you know, coaches. I've had a lot of different spiritual coaches. I've, you know, been in and out of different, I would say, you know, religious circles and how that has impacted me. But for me, it was really a lot of, to be completely honest, the psychedelics that I've done over the last 10 years of my life. I've done a lot of different psychedelics, you know, some recreationally, just being young and immature and wanting to party, right? And others, as I've gotten older, to go, I really am going to do deep rooted work on my mindset, on my soul, based on what it is that I want to become, who I envision myself being. So those are some of the things that through, you know, studies and coaches and just lots of research and then personal experimentation. I don't recommend it for everybody. And at the same time, I can say what you said a little bit earlier that resonated with me was consciously my mind couldn't have done the work without those things. As crazy as that sounds, the psychedelics that allowed me to really tap into subconscious thoughts and programming I would have never even known I had and or been able to work on or consciously think about working on without those things. So it's a very interesting, you know, topic to dig into because it's definitely becoming more mainstream now. I mean, I've done ayahuasca retreats. I've done acid. I've done, you know, psilocybin mushrooms in different capacities. And that's ultimately where a lot of my deep-rooted subconscious work has begun. Is identifying blind spots or traumas or things that I never knew I had or baggage that I never knew I was carrying with me until I had some of those experiences. And you can find those, I think, in different ways without doing psychedelics, but that's just been my personal experience and how I've been able to, through that process, the key word here, create awareness. Through awareness, you can create space to actually do the work. Right? That awareness creates clarity. The clarity gives you the option to decide what kind of work you want to do from there based on what kind of outcomes you're looking to get. And for a lot of people, it's, you know, getting completely different results than what they've been getting. And sometimes that doesn't require anything drastic, but doing something completely different than you've been doing. And us being, you know, creatures of habit, and, you know, the way nature and nurture are designed for us to not want to do things outside of our comfort zone, right? Now I've just started to really embrace the conversation in my own head that anytime something to me makes me feel nervous or concerned or the fear of failure or just fear in general comes up, that's usually now, instead of for me being a flight response and trigger, it's lean in. Because there's something good that is going to learn from this. And I don't know if anybody else has felt this in their own life, but you know, outside of like real fear of somebody pointing a gun and you're staring down the barrel, you know, in your face, or there's, you know, a car coming 500 miles an hour at you and it can actually kill you, which most of those scenarios and circumstances are few and far between for most human beings in their lifetime. All of the fears that we create are theoretical. They are all in our minds. And when you go through, because we all have these scenarios and circumstances in our life where we've been fearful at some point in time, and you decided to push through that fear anyways, and then you got to the other side and you took your pulse and your heart's still beating and your wife's still married to you and your kids still think you're awesome. And you're like, okay, that wasn't as bad as I thought it was. Those fears, time and time again, that you can overcome, slowly start to turn into confidence. And so now, as I've stacked fear overcome into confidence, and then done that again in other scenarios and circumstances, a fear overcome turned into confidence, you do that more and more and more. Now, when those things show up, the conversation and the physical engagement with how you navigate those circumstances and situations for me is, all right, it's a call to adventure now that I know I'm going to learn something about myself. I might fail, but at the same time, I might find some amazing things that completely open up new thoughts or new habits or new relationships or new opportunities in my life that I wouldn't have had otherwise if I decided to run in the other direction.
So I'm curious about these experiences. You mentioned an ayahuasca retreat. Obviously, there was some sort of a guidance in a retreat. Correct. There was a leader or a uh-huh. facilitator or something. Has a lot of that been sort of self-experimentation, or have you, you know, gone to places where there was a facilitator or a more experienced guide to kind of steer you?
Early on, it was more self-experimentation. And I would say, you know, in my late 20s, early 30s, it's all been very professionally moderated, you know, above board, right? Doing it the right way to get the most out of the experience. For me, it's not just a party and like, ooh, you know, I'm going to have fun with my friends and, you know, see some cool things or create some fun memories, which is great. But for me, it was, if I'm going to do these things, I'm doing them to get real tangible, deep-seated results and growth out of it, not just to have a fun time. So like in the ayahuasca retreat, I mean, there is a process leading up to it in terms of a diet, in terms of the work you have to do, in terms of the stuff you have to read and research to even show the shamans and the facilitators that you are ready to go and do this work. This is not something that you're going to go and have a great time partying for a weekend sitting at this retreat. You're going to do deep rooted work on your soul, on your mindset, on your heart. And those are things that made me a better husband, a better father, a better business leader, a more emotionally aware and intelligent and empathetic human being towards other people, especially for hard charging entrepreneurs who are always climbing some wild mountain and looking at whatever summit is right in front of us. We lose sight in terms of how to serve ourselves and the people around us sometimes in pursuit of those goals, which makes us part of who we are and what our identity is. But at the same time, I wanted to make sure that in pursuit of those summits, knowing that there's really going to be an endless amount, you know, when I get to the top of Mount Kilimanjaro, I'm looking for the next, you know, 14 or 15 or that I can summit, right? It's just the way I am designed. It's the way many of you, I'm sure, who are listening are designed. We're always looking for something next. But at the same time, I wanted to make sure that I was enjoying every aspect of the process and the journey instead of just getting to whatever the destination or outcome was. And circling back to what I said earlier of like, one day you're not a millionaire, but then you look in your bank account 24 hours later and you cross that threshold. Does it really change how you feel about yourself or how you create happiness in your life or how you treat other human beings or how you pursue this or that? Maybe in certain degrees, but at the end of the day, I look back and fall back on my core values as a human being, and how I show up in my life and how I lead my life and what that can not only do for me and my family, you know, selfishly wanting to model that, but also, you know, unselfishly, and even what could be a greater impact or influence in the world is how it makes a difference in other people's lives as well. And so I don't sit here and judge based on my own experience and, you know, what I see other people doing, and whether I think it's right or wrong, how they're doing it. I just want to be the best version of myself in the sense that, yes, I do feel like I'm a shepherd and a messenger of certain things in life that, as you've done, right, Jeff, you're a shepherd of so many different entrepreneurial pieces of wisdom and experiences and platforms and business and life and how you show up as a podcaster, all those things, right? And so for me, I just want my own unique experience and my own unique brand to not just be a messenger, but to make sure that as I speak that message, I'm also living that message to my highest level.
That's really beautifully said. I'll tell you why I mean, aside from the fact that it's just interesting regardless, but I'll tell you why I was drawn to the psychedelics experiences you've had in the question. So I spoke at an event probably a month ago, and there was a gentleman there who was a Navy SEAL, a retired Navy SEAL, who had essentially used psychedelics to treat his own post-traumatic stress and, mm-hmm. and do a lot of deep work on himself.
Yep.
And he now runs an experience where he facilitates that for other people. Full disclosure, I'm totally interested. And, but what's interesting too, he has an alternative option that, you know, partly because some people just, you know, aren't comfortable with the idea of doing a psychedelic. And
yeah, it's out there for sure.
But there's an alternative option. This was super fascinating to me. And it's totally coincidental. I have a consultation with the alternative option in 1 hour. Like, I'm going to be on the phone with them in 1 hour. And what they do is they use, your gut biome mm-hmm. to stimulate the same neurotransmitter driven effects as using psychedelics.
And, interesting.
And the premise is that you're only born with like 8% of the neurotransmitters that you need to function. Like, you're not born with dopamine and mm-hmm. serotonin and, yeah, I don't know, whatever else, you know, catalyzes brain processes, and that they're produced by your gut. And so most people that have neurological or even psychiatric problems in many cases could actually tie it to a gut problem.
Interesting.
And so they're able to stimulate essentially a similar effect. And it's a lot longer form. I mean, the psychedelics, you go, you hang out for 3 days or 4 days or whatever, and they, you know, use microdosing and they facilitate, and it happens pretty fast. And they say the effects from that happen a lot faster. Mm-hmm. But when they do it through biome stimulation and essentially nutritional supplementation, it can take a lot longer, but it actually, they say, can go deeper even. And it's a lot more expensive too. I mean, instead of a $10,000 experience, like a $30,000 or $40,000 experience, because there's hospitals and doctors and supplements,
right.
And it takes a year. But we don't even have to talk about it on this show. I'd love to swap stories and knowledge about it, but I'm just so intrigued by this idea. And I guess I'm curious. So do you get people, first of all, do you share that a lot, that you had those experiences?
Yeah, I'm pretty open with it. I mean, I've talked about it on my podcast a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not something that I did this, right? But if people ask about it or my own experiences, and that is an integral part of whatever outcome or aha or tangible takeaway or integration that I've had that ties into my success or my happiness or my fulfillment, absolutely, I'll share with it. I've always been one of these outside of the box thinkers and people, so I'm okay with people kind of giving me the crooked stare and like, really, that's kind of out there and crazy. And I also think part of one of my gifts is to make it seem normal.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not some crazy dude that, you know, is rolling around with a hula hoop and, you know, living in a van down by the river. And, you know, and if that's what you are and what you want to do, cool. That might be your definition of your rich life too, but it's not everybody that does that is that type of, you know, person. Right. And so I know a lot of people who have done a lot of transformative work using microdosing or using psychedelics in very controlled, responsible, research-driven environments that are normal people like you and I. They have families, they've got killer businesses, they're part of charities and make a big difference in their community. And they're not just some person that you might associate with the taboo of psychedelics that many people have seen and felt for many years and what narratives have surrounded those communities, right? So I do openly talk about it because it's part of who I am. It's part of my journey. It's part of what has allowed me to be more empathetic and more intentional and more purposeful as a father and as a husband, as a human being in general. And I think if I can share those aspects of my unique journey and it makes one little difference or help somebody else in that process to either explore something that they wouldn't have given themselves permission to explore otherwise, that's something that I'm responsible to do. And so that's why I like to talk about it, because I mean, I've had some pretty wild and trippy experiences. And at the end of the day, I'm still a very purposeful, hard-charging individual that I don't feel like I've lost any aspects of who I am or lost an edge. If anything, I've 2.0'd who I am. I've put more tools on my tool belt. When you put in the work on yourself mentally, or you put in the work on yourself physically, this is the beauty of doing the boring shit that 99.9% of the planet isn't willing to do over an extended period of time, is the pure, simple, driven fact that no one, absolutely no one or nothing can ever take that away from you.
Yeah.
And so for me, I find peace and solace in the fact that I put in the work, man. And nobody else can take that away from me. And whatever you want to say or what judgment you want to maybe throw or cast at me, shit, I got Teflon skin. That doesn't bother me anymore because I put in the work on myself to know who I truly am and how I show up in the world. And that might resonate and align with a lot of people, and it may not. And I'm cool with that now versus early on in my journey when I didn't do the work or I felt like an imposter. Well, a lot of those feelings and reasons were warranted and justified because I didn't do the work. And so that's where I just encourage anybody, no matter what outcome it is that you're pushing or driving towards, whatever that plan or that process looks like, it could be different for one person to the next, but at the end of the day, whatever results you get, it's going to be purely driven on what work you really did put in. And the beauty is no one can take that away from you.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, there's probably a chance you'll get some results that you didn't earn just because
like,
crazy stuff happens.
Yeah, sure.
But I don't think you'll keep them.
It's not sustainable. Exactly.
I think the results that you keep are always the results that you did the work for.
100%. Couldn't agree more.
And I've seen it so many times, people getting to, you know, what's effectively a next level of success for them. It's all relative, obviously.
Sure.
And as soon as they start to succeed beyond their level of personal growth and personal output, they will find a way to sabotage it.
Absolutely.
And honestly, I've come to a place and, you know, over the last couple of years, I've had what for me has been by far the most dramatic vertical rise in growth and, you know, everything that I'm trying to do professionally. I actually have a great, I don't want to say a fear, but I think a lot about, I would say I have great concern around, I don't want this to happen too fast.
Yeah.
Because I need to make sure that I'm always ahead of the result with the work, or else I'll reach a point where I know I don't deserve it anymore.
That's a great point.
You know,
and I think a lot of people know that, and that's where they self-sabotage themselves, right? And it is kind of that cooling of the temperature, the thermostat, right? And one of my favorite books by Gay Hendricks called The Big Leap. And what he uses in the context of our conversation, what we're talking about right now, is this term of upper limiting yourself, where you hit this limit that is a little bit higher than maybe you've ever been before. And we always find a way to cool ourselves back down.
Yeah.
And that is, at least in my opinion, something that every single human being on the planet is not exempt from. It's when you find yourself upper limiting yourself or bashing your head up against a ceiling over and over and over again, you're like, why the hell can I not break through this thing? There's a very simple answer, and it oftentimes is always going to start in your mind, right? And what kind of conversation you're having subconsciously without maybe knowing that you're having that conversation. And so really going back into that filing cabinet based on what area of life you might be banging your head up against that ceiling and figuring out how you might be able to think or act differently that creates new results that reaffirms new programming for you. And that's why I like that point for our model, right? Is you can really apply that sequence of things to any particular category of your life and experiment a little bit. And you might, you know, try two or three different things and they just don't work, right? But you might tweak and optimize or pivot and try something new. And all of a sudden now there's something that's clicking that is more aligned or more congruent with the outcomes and results that you're looking for, which then ultimately are going to start building new, you know, lines in tracks of conversation within your mind and in your brain that are going to serve you instead of keeping you limited to where you've been at, kind of treading water in quicksand for quite some time.
Yeah. You know, the classic example that comes to mind when you talk about that is, you know, I'm sure you're familiar, the lottery winner outcomes.
Oh, right? Yeah. Yep.
70%. And by the way, it's not just lottery winners. It includes people that get large insurance settlements.
Professional athletes.
70% of people who receive a large windfall of money from something that was based off of luck or chance, 70% are broke within 3 to 5 years.
Yep.
Of the remaining 30%, 29% will die with less than they won. And a big portion of that will go broke within 10 years or 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
But only 1% of people who get a windfall will actually die with more money than they got. And yet we all know, they say it takes money to make money. And once you have a lot of money, it should be theoretically easier to make money, right? But yet you give these people all this money that they haven't really worked for. And suddenly it seems to be harder to make or keep money than it was when they were broke or when they were, let's say, normal or struggling, right? At least then they were making some gains.
Yep.
It's funny how it works. So I know we're actually about out of time, or we're over time, and I apologize. I've just enjoyed this conversation so much. I hope that's okay.
Oh, dude, I've enjoyed it myself.
If you have time, I'd like to ask one more question.
Yeah, let's do it.
About the psychedelics thing, and I'm being very selfish here and just asking out of my own self-interest, my own curiosity. Would you say that you experienced any negative effects, or was there really any downside to doing that work?
No, not. My biggest fear, at least going into the ayahuasca retreat and journey, was, man, you know, I've got some pretty sizable businesses that are moving. Yeah. I own some pretty, you know, sizable assets. I have 2 young children. Yeah. I have employees. I've got a beautiful wife. Like, what if I come back and I'm like, oh, I'm divorcing my wife. I don't want to be a dad anymore. I'm going to shut down all my businesses and go live in a van down by the river. Like, that was one of my biggest thoughts of like, you start messing with your mind. You know, our mind is an infinitely powerful entity that we still don't even know how powerful it is and what its capacities are. And so that was one of my biggest fears was, what if something happens that I am out of control of? And I come back and my life is forever changed in a bad way.
Yeah.
Of all of the psychedelic experiences I've had, part of my biggest takeaway of every single one of them, we as human beings, especially hard charging entrepreneurs, we like a word that starts with C, and that is control.
Yeah.
Every aspect of our life, we like to control. Our business, we like to control. And the number one takeaway from every one of those experiences at the root of it all was surrender. Surrendering to what the experience is going to give you. And, you know, people, when they start psychedelics, when you're doing psychedelics, I mean, you're seeing and experiencing some pretty intense shit. Let's just be honest. Mm-hmm. It's out there. There's things that your conscious mind can never see without psychedelics, right? And so it can be very intense. It can be sometimes very painful, right? I mean, part of one of my retreats and my ayahuasca journey was, it was painful in the sense of it was heart-wrenching. I was doing deep work on my soul and in my mind. And I almost didn't want to go back for the second night because I was that kind of, I guess, emotionally drained from it and scared. But at the end of the day, when I look back on every single experience that I've had and where those have taken me mentally that I can recall and remember, there is not one thing that I'm like, ooh, I've never been the same since I did that. It's just never, it for me, it's been an accumulation of, again, awareness and expanding parts of my brain, of my spirit, of my heart, of my soul that I would have never been able to explore without those experiences. And I'm forever grateful for that. It's made me a better, more well-rounded human being, father, husband, business owner. And I feel like it's given me the ability to connect with people in a way that I would have never been able to connect at the level I can connect with them without having some of those ahas and those experiences firsthand. Now, I can't say that it is the same for everybody. And so that's where, again, like I'm just sharing my own unique experiences. Yeah, I know some people that they've had experiences and they haven't been the same from it. So, I've always looked at myself because I faced some pretty extreme hardships in my life and bounced back from them, that unless something kills me, like my mindset is always going to be, how do I get stronger and grow from this experience? And no matter if that's psychedelics or that's losing out on a big job opportunity inside my real estate investments or whatever it may be, I'm always going to come with that mentality and attitude at the core of everything.
Well, it shows, man. It really does. This has been a great conversation, and it's powerful. I hope everybody really, really listened. You know, it's funny, is we didn't talk about like how to market or how to do how to you know, analyze a property or something. I mean, you know, obviously you've flipped hundreds of houses. You own at least one hotel that I know of.
Yeah, I'm buying my second right now. I'm excited about that. But yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, right, we could sit here and talk X's and O's and strategy and business all day long. But at the end of the day, how you mentally and physically prepare and show up in the game of life and business is going to be way more important than the plan or the strategy book or the roadmap for how to get there. Yes, of course, right, that is an integral variable and part of the equation. But at the end of the day, that game and how you show up on that field is way more important than ultimately the game plan of when you're on the field, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, you think about sports, you know, people win championships with all kinds of strategies, you know.
Absolutely.
The Golden State Warriors were popping threes like crazy. The Detroit Pistons back in the 90s were just playing tough, gritty D and beating the hell out of everyone. And Michael Jordan was doing what he did. And, you know, the Lakers did it different. I mean, like the Celtics did it different than the Lakers, but like it's about the preparation. It's about the excellence, about the habits. Yeah. It's not about what plays you run. There's a lot of ways to make a lot of money.
Yeah. I mean, Phil Jackson, you know, won NBA championships with triangle offense.
And yeah, he created something that nobody had ever seen before.
That's what I'm saying, good. Right? Yeah. So there's so many different ways of going about it. I think it's knowing yourself, having a good rhythm of good routines and habits that you know you can consistently plug into. Of course, it's going to be who you surround yourself with and what environments you, you know, are opted into or protecting yourself from. But ultimately, I look at the people who have the greatest impacts and also the greatest outcomes. And again, I'm not modeling to be like the guy who's a billionaire and his wife hates him and his kids right. never see him and he's fat and overweight. And like, that's not the person I'm modeling after. And if somebody wants to model after that person, shit, go for it. That's awesome, right? If that's what you really want, awesome. But when I look at who am I allowing to speak into my life? And what am I actually modeling after? Not only just from a results perspective, but what's their reputation? How does their wife talk about them? What do their kids think about them, right? Do they do other things in their community outside of just serving themselves and making a shitload of money, right? So I look at a lot of those things. And then based on that, you can pick and pull what you want to integrate into your own journey, knowing that, hey, your book and what you're writing for your story of life is going to be different than mine too. There's going to probably be some cool overlapping, you know, strategies or mindsets or habits or disciplines, but that's the beauty of this journey that we're on. It's unique to every single person. And the second you start trying to make your journey exactly like somebody else's is when you strip yourself away from your own gifts and your own unique abilities and your own superpowers to actually create and uncover all of the amazing experiences that you're going to have and get to enjoy by following your path instead of trying to march down somebody else's exactly the way they did it.
Amen. Be yourself. Everyone else is taken.
That's right, man.
This has been amazing. How can the audience go, speaking of journeys, how can they attach themselves to yours and follow along?
Yeah, I mean, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, I've got the Millionaire Mindcast podcast. Been doing that for about 5 years. We're top 100 business podcasts in iTunes. So they can always check that out for content. I am posting pretty much every day on, you know, my Instagram stories at official Matty A is my handle pretty much across all my platforms. Or you guys can always text me at 844-447-1555. I've got a couple, you know, cool different freebies and downloads for people based on, you know, my audience. And most of the people who follow me are either business owners or real estate investors, looking to unlock and create financial freedom through real estate, through investing in different syndications or business offerings that my group puts out there. So you guys can always text me on that front. If you want my free real estate investing course, just text the word invest to that same number, 844-447-1555, and we'll be able to connect there.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for all your time and willingness to give and share. We'll put all those links and numbers in the descriptions and the show notes. If you have enjoyed this, and frankly, I'd be surprised if you're still here if you didn't enjoy it, because we've been going for an hour. Do us a favor, please. Help us get the word out. I believe deeply that the world needs these types of conversations a lot more than the conversations that get served up more frequently. If you're watching this on YouTube, give us a like, subscribe if you'd like to get more. If you're listening on a podcast platform, please help us, you know, give us a positive review. Hell, give us a negative review if you made it this long and for some reason you didn't like it, but give us the feedback. We do this because we believe in the power of a conversation, and that's not just a one-way thing. So thanks to everyone out there. Thank you, Matt. This has been incredible.
Pleasure, Jeff.
To all the viewers and listeners, you know you are the best part of this show. You're why I do what I do every day. And I can't wait to see you on the next one. Take care.
You just finished this episode of the Millionaire Secrets Podcast. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please like and share this episode and do leave us a review. Let us know how we impacted you today. Your next step toward creating your awesome life is to join me and thousands of others in the Entre Nation community, where you'll receive free training, networking with other awesome life seekers, access to live events, discounts, merchandise, and other awesome perks. Head over to www.entrenation.com. That is www.entrenation.com, and join us today. And of course, do please follow me on social media. I can be found on all the major social networks at Jeff Lerner Official. Thank you again for listening, and please go be awesome.